Hello and welcome to the Thinking Poker Podcast from Catonsville, Maryland. I am Andrew Brokus.
And from Las Vegas, Nevada, I'm Carlos Welch.
We were not planning to put out an episode this week, but we have big, 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 big news. Too big to wait another week. In fact, we would be costing you money if we put it off for a week. Legal online poker is returning to the United States, 46 of them anyway, and most of Canada. Brought to you by the World Poker Tour, Club WPT Gold will be launching soon. And to celebrate, they are hosting a $5 million free roll. That's $5 million. They're giving away only 2,000 seats. And there's only one way to win one of those seats, which is to sign up with a bonus code such as ours. That's THINK, as in thinking poker, THINK. If you sign up for Club WPT Gold with that promo code, you will be entered to potentially win a seat in this $5 million free roll. Drawings for seats to the free roll are underway now, so you're going to want to sign up as soon as possible to give yourself as many chances to win. You can go to clubwptgold.com and enter THINK as your promo code. I will also put a link in the show notes. Club WPT Gold is a new online poker site opening soon in the United States. It is distinct from Club WPT. It is distinct from WPT Global. Even if you have accounts on those other sites, you will need a new account on Club WPT Gold in order to play online poker there and also to be in contention to win seats in this free roll. Club WPT Gold will use the sweepstakes model, meaning you can either compete in casual free games for gold coins or for cash and prizes using sweeps coins. But in order to do that, you need to create a new account at Club WPT Gold and use promo code THINK, THINK.
I think we've all played free rolls, but none of us ever played a free roll that you could potentially win $1 million in. So this is very cool. And obviously having a poker site that's available to the vast majority of the U.S. states since Black Friday, it's been a long time. So this is a big deal, and highly recommend everyone check out Club WPT Go.
If you have any interest in playing online poker from the US or Canada, take a second to sign up now. Pause the podcast. Go do it. ClubWPTGold.com. Promo code THINK. It is the most plus EV thing you can do for yourself right now, and it will be a big help to us as well. We also have something special for you on this episode. What you are about to hear is the 1,000th episode of our Patreon show, Thinking Poker Daily, which is exactly what it sounds like. It is a podcast Carlos and I put out 5 days a week for patrons who support us on patreon.com/thinkingpokerdaily. And I'll turn it over to Carlos to tell you a little bit more about Thinking Poker Daily.
Yes, so Thinking Poker Daily is a project that Nate Mavis, former co-host of this show, I will say that it was his brainchild to put this team together, where the three of us would do short daily episodes Monday through Friday of just the strategy segments that you often hear on the show. And since that time, after like the first 200 episodes or so, Nate had to step away from the show. And so for the past 800 episodes, it's just been Andrew and I, and we recently hit our 1,000th episode. And to commemorate that milestone, we decided to, instead of just answering a strategy question like we normally would, we would just look back over the first 1,000 episodes to talk about some of our favorite strategy episodes. And we decided that instead of spending the 10 to 15 minutes that we would normally use answering a question, that we would stretch this episode out to a full 90 minutes to talk about, like I said, our past episodes, our favorite past episodes, and to give the new people that sign up a decent idea of like what they missed, because you still have access to all those 1,000 episodes if you were to sign up today. So if you do sign up today, and I highly recommend you do, you can listen to this episode to get an idea of which episodes you might want to go back and check out. And yeah, and then also submit your own questions for future episodes.
This show is a ton of fun. We have a lot of fun recording it. The strategy can be anything on a given episode. You know, sometimes we get theory questions. Sometimes there are questions about hands, tournaments, cash, sometimes even games other than Hold'em. It really comes down to the questions that you ask. One of the benefits of being a patron is you get to ask questions that we will potentially discuss on the show. So we have a lot of fun with this. I don't think you will regret signing up and listening to it. It's a great way to support the show as well. And I think you'll really enjoy hearing these strategy segments. Hello and welcome to episode 1000 of Thinking Poker Daily. From Catonsville, Maryland, I am Andrew Brokus.
And from Las Vegas, Nevada, I'm Carlos Welch.
Well, if you're listening to Thinking Poker Daily, you probably also listen to the regular show, which means that you recognize that's not how we usually introduce Thinking Poker Daily. But I mean, for episode 1000, I didn't want it to go unnoticed that this is episode 1000. So, Carlos, congratulations on 1000 episodes of Thinking Poker Daily.
Congratulations to you too. The only thing missing from the intro is wherever in the world Nate is right now.
Yeah, I imagine he's in Melrose, Massachusetts, but I guess I don't know for sure.
Yeah.
Actually, I think he's not even in Melrose anymore. A different town near Melrose in Massachusetts. But yeah, so neither of us has actually done 1,000 episodes, although you and I have done a hell of a lot closer to 1,000 than Nate has. But yeah, at one time, there was a third host of Thinking Poker Daily, and we used to rotate. We tried to have two of the three of us on every episode. So it used to be that you would get Carlos and Nate episodes, Andrew and Carlos episodes, Andrew and Nate episodes, and they would all have a slightly different flavor. There are even a few Andrew and Tommy Angelo episodes. There was one week when neither you nor Nate was available. It might even been after Nate left. But and I got Tommy Angelo to come in and do some guest spots. Occasionally, one of us has done a solo episode, but I imagine we've both done like 900 episodes of these anyway. Like we've been on most of them.
Couple of episodes with Gloria Jackson, as well as not in voice, but in strategic advice, a couple of episodes with Dr. Kamikaze.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
yeah, so we've definitely had some help throughout these first 1,000 episodes.
And I do want to shout, I appreciate that you congratulated me, but I do think of this as a little bit more your project than mine. For people who don't know, Carlos is really the one who handles most of the Thinking Poker Daily stuff, taking in the all of the questions that are suggested, putting up on the Patreon, scheduling time with me when we're going to discuss these. I think of this as your project first and foremost, and so I do think this is your achievement first and foremost.
Oh, I definitely appreciate that. Thank you. And we should also give credit to Nate, who was like the father of Thinking Poker Daily. Like this whole thing was his
The
idea.
absentee father.
Yeah. Deadbeat dad Nate Mavis created Thinking Poker Daily and then
Ironically, the
hit
reason he's a
the
deadbeat dad to Thinking Poker Daily is so that he can be a better
road.
dad to, I think he has four children now, maybe five.
So he created this baby and then he created a real baby and he had to, prioritize. And so he left Andrew and I to take care of this one. And we have a toddler now. It's been about close to so 4 years. We're coming up on 4 years and I think we did a pretty good job so far.
I love it. I mean, I appreciate that it's found an audience and the people are listening to it, but I love having the impetus to talk strategy with you. I guess it ends up being more like every other week, then we get together and do about 10 of these.
Yes. It's been amazing.
So for today, I think what we can do is kind of look back through the archives. Carlos has got them very nicely, I don't know, collated, very nicely organized here on
Yes.
the screen that he's shared with me. And particularly, you've tried to filter for the theory focused episodes because I know that we always get excited to see theory. Not that we're not happy to answer people's hand questions, but usually when someone has a hand question, our goal is always not just to answer how should you have played that one spot that's over and done with, but to try to pull from it some misunderstandings or things that could be better handled that would be relevant to many other situations, so that, you know, both for the person who's writing in, it'll be useful to them in hands that they play in the future, but also, of course, for people who are listening who had nothing to do with that original hand, we want to, you know, ultimately be providing strategy information that'll be usable by everybody. So usually what we're trying to do when we get a hand question is turn it into a theory question anyway. And so it's nice when people send us theory questions, they've sort of done half the work already, where they just cut straight to the theory. So I think our plan for today is we're going to kind of look back through some old theory episodes, maybe reminisce about those a little bit, and try to talk about some of the things that we either remember being particularly good, or were some things that we learned from one another that we've been able to put into play in our own poker play.
Yeah, just logistically, it makes sense to focus on the theory episodes, because like I'm looking at the screen now. Episode 10 was Andrew and Nate played 10-8 suited in a cash game. Like, maybe there was like some great insights gleaned from that episode, and maybe that was like a very memorable conversation, but you can't tell that from the title. But with the theory episodes, the titles are easier. The title of the theory episodes do a better job of jogging our memory about what may have been talked about in the episode. And so it's just easier to, like you said, to get straight to the heart of it. Like, even in the hand history episodes, we're looking to give like theory like takeaways, but we just can't find those by looking at the title of the hand history episodes. But episode 11, Nate and Andrew tell a limit hold'em player how to play no limit hold'em. Like, I can imagine that was a pretty fun episode for those who play limit hold'em. And then also for those of us who only play no limit, to just think about, you know, generally thinking about multiple variants of poker does a good job of expanding your horizons in each variant. So that would be one, you know, we kind of want to start with some of the some of Nate's episodes that we can recommend people go back and listen to. So if I see something that I kind of want to go back and listen to, then it's probably a pretty good recommendation for others. So episode 11, Nate and Andrew tell a limit hold'em player how to play no limit hold'em. Like, that's one that sounds interesting to me.
Yeah, I remember, I feel the same way, even though I was on it, you know, it was 4 years ago. I don't remember what we said. And I have a similar temptation to, you know, go back in here. I do think that's something that Nate would be very good at answering. And so I imagine I learned something from Nate on that episode.
Yeah, so that page is just like, the rest of these episodes are just hand history episodes, which I'm sure are great, but we just don't know exactly what we're talked about in those. But when we just kind of skimmed over this earlier, I saw some really good ones. I love the simplicity of this one. Episode 35, Andrew and Nate recommend aggression. Oh, man. I might just spend the rest of the day going back and listening to these old Nate episodes. That one, I mean, I'm sure it's great, but the title seems a little bland. Where's the one that I'm definitely gonna go back and listen to? The one about the, what was it, platonic ideal? So Andrew and Nate discuss okay, see, this is my misunderstanding of that phrase. So by this time I'd taken over the administration of the show. And I titled this episode, Andrew and Nate Discuss Platonic Hand Discussion. And at the time, I was wondering, like, what the hell is platonic hand discussion? But what I now realize is that the correspondent said platonic ideal hand discussion. And I didn't know what that meant until Andrew just explained it to me. So maybe you can explain that to the listeners again.
Yeah, the way that I was, I mean, I have a degree in philosophy. It's been 20 years since I got that degree. So my recollection might be a little foggy, but I think the general idea of a platonic ideal of anything is that there are certain things that exist in, like, if I told you, imagine a chair, you know, you're probably not imagining a specific chair. You're imagining, you know, whatever it is. Like, there's an ideal of what is a chair or a table, or probably more so in Plato's case, like what is a leader, what is learning, what is knowledge, things like that. That, you know, no chair that's made by humans is ever going to reach the Platonic ideal, but that ideal is what guides a crafts person who's making a chair. You know, they have in their head, here's the thing that I'm trying to make. And so if we're having a Platonic hand discussion, it wouldn't necessarily mean like discussing a hand the way Plato, you know, in like the Socratic dialogues would be discussing something. Although I think it's fair to say that like Plato's writing, he was probably aspiring to his Platonic ideal of what a discussion would look like. So I think actually it might mean the same thing. But I think that the question here was sort of what would an ideal hand discussion look like? Nate, by the way, has a PhD in philosophy. So, and specifically with an emphasis on Plato. So hopefully he doesn't hear this and just be embarrassed by how badly I explained that.
It's so perfect. It's so perfect to have, you know, that question come up and have you and Nate discuss this, given his education in Plato. So that's one that I would recommend. That was episode 161, and on the fly I just kind of like edited the title. So now Andrew and Nate discuss Platonic ideal hand history, hand discussion. And I capitalize ideal. I assume that's supposed to be capitalized. That sounds like a phrase that's kind of like a thing. I could be wrong on that.
Yeah, I think that's probably, I mean, I think at the very least it's useful to emphasize that it is like a specific term that you're referencing.
Right. I mean, that I could have used that when I was initially, because I had no clue. But that sounds like a fun episode for those of you who came around after episode 165, which was Nate's last episode, and you kind of want to like go back in time to like 2021 and 2020 to see what the show sounded like with Nate involved. Those are some of the theory episodes we can recommend. And I didn't see many theory episodes with Nate. There's another one here. Andrew and Nate discuss how to handle mistakes. The title seems a little bland, but I think you and Nate probably had a pretty good discussion and given people pretty good advice on that thing. Like that's a very important topic. And so you guys do a good job of telling people, pointing people in the right direction when it comes to very important topics like that. So although this title isn't as sexy as Platonic ideals, I bet you that episode 164 it would be also a good one to go back and listen to.
Yeah, it is something that I have some pretty strong and well-formed opinions on. And it's also the kind of thing that I think of Nate as being very good at.
Yes. So that's it for the Nate theory episodes. So now we're going to move on to the theory episodes with just the two of us. And we'll start back in...
By the way, quick thought. I had a moment of gratitude recently that we finally passed the era where people felt like they had to sing the Will Smith song every time that there were two players seeing a flop. Like that was really a thing for a while. People would be like, just the two of us, and then they would like sing. And like, really? Maybe you weren't playing a lot of live poker at that time, but like, yeah. That was a corny joke that I heard very consistently at the table for a while.
See, that one never crossed my plate as an online player. Like I've kind of picked up some of these like corny live jokes that you hear over and over again, but that one didn't occur to me. Like the one I always think about is when people play the same hand and they're like, "You play that shit?" Like I've heard that over and over again, but not the just the two of us, and they literally sang it. That's hilarious.
Yeah, the same guy who says just who says you play that garbage is also the guy who sings just the two of us.
Gotcha. See, okay, now I know why I haven't heard that, because in the games I play in, you never get heads up pots. Just the five of us. So I'm glad that That era has passed for your sake. All right, so now we have a lot to choose from, so we'll just skim through this, and if you see anything interesting, just let me know. I'm going to slowly scroll this up.
I'll tell you. So episode 149 jumps out at me, discuss adjustments for Rake. And the reason this jumps out at me is I know that when we recorded this was before, certainly before we had access to GTA Wizard. I guess GTA Wizard probably existed, but I don't think GTA Wizard would have had what they have now, which are they actually have sims run with different Rake structures, and you can make comparisons about these things. So I think there's going to be a few topics like this that I know that we had a conversation about before we had good simulations to actually like test our theories on. And I have now written, like I've written an article for the GTO Wizard blog on exactly this subject. And I think, you know, people might be interested to compare kind of like what were we speculating would be the adjustments for Rake back on episode 149 compared to, you know, once Andrew actually sat down with data and was able to, you know, have a more informed opinion on that. How right were we?
That sounds really fun. I love going back and see, we have the benefit of this because so much of our former the former versions of ourselves is recorded, that we can always go back and see what we had right, what we had wrong, and what we've learned over the years. It's so fun doing that for me. Yeah, so that's a good one to recommend. Again, that was episode 149. Andrew and Carlos discuss adjustments for Rake.
174 range splitting theory. That's another one I've written about for the GTA Wizard blog in the past year.
Yep, that's another one. Let's see, like, just from the title there, that one isn't, I don't have a great idea of what might be in the episode. Yeah, so just kind of like skimming over the description of the episode, is basically about, I mean, I guess generally like how to split range. So it seems like the essential questions here is, so is it that I want to split my range when I have a large section of hands with competing incentives and I can easily balance both ranges? And is it that when I have both range advantage and nut advantage, that I have the privilege of being able to split my range? So, without getting all completely into it, this sounds like a very informed correspondent. And so, I feel like that episode probably stands up to the test of time. It sounds pretty, like even the question sounds pretty theoretically solid. So I imagine it prompt us to have a pretty good discussion on that idea of range splitting.
Yeah, I had the same thought on Maria. I think this is one of those questions where we kind of just, I mean, I'm sure we said a lot more, but like we could have just said, yep, you got it.
Yeah, love those episodes. Love those episodes. All right, so that was on range splitting. Ooh. Andrew and Carlos discuss work-study balance. Yeah, I don't know what I said in 2021, but I have. Oh, wait a minute, wait a minute. I'm probably imbalanced when it comes, and I guess by work we mean play. And I'm imbalanced to the study side. I study a decent amount more than I play. And this was probably somebody asking, like, what should their ratio be? And some of the recommendations I hear just sound like woefully inadequate when it comes to the study side. But for me personally, I enjoy studying, so it's not a chore. Like I've heard people say you should, like, study 1 hour for every 3 hours you play. Like, I might be the opposite. I might study for every 3 hours I play.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way there's one right answer to that question for everybody. So, you know, I'm sure what we're doing there is kind of just telling people more generally, like, how should you think about those? And the answer is going to be different depending on like where you are, you're in your career, and what your goals are, and that kind of thing.
Yep. That was episode 181 on work study balance.
I would also call it 186, dealing with upswings and downswings. I mean, that's just one of the most important things to be able to do in poker. Now, I have always said that this is getting a little less true now, but I think for the most part, like the thing that really trips up would be professional players or would be serious players is not a lack of poker skill. Like, you don't have to be great at poker to make a living from poker, but you do have to be able to manage your money and manage your emotional swings. And I think that what has really messed people up is not being able to handle both downswings and upswings. And there's a lot of people who, play above their rake or sorry, play above their role, take shots, blow money on stuff just because they had a good month. It can go in both directions, but I think that's really one of the most important skills is being able to handle upswings and downswings.
Yeah, I agree with that. And what's unique about this topic is in episode 946, which came 3 years after that episode 186, somebody asked specifically about how to take advantage of an upswing. Like, this was not a conversation that I heard anywhere else until we had it. And I don't remember what the discussion was from 2021 on the upswing side. Like, we've constantly heard people discuss about how to deal with downswings, but the idea of having to even deal with an upswing, like, that's not something you hear very often. And like I said, specifically in episode 946, someone asked how to take advantage of upswing. That episode I remember fondly as one where it was helpful for me to have that conversation as well. So yeah, it's
Sick
so
brag.
funny. Yeah, look, I mean, it's almost like I needed an episode in 2021, not in 2024 when we discussed it. Yeah, man, that, I mean, now that I think about it, this episode on dealing with an upswing came out in August 16th of 2021, which was about a month after I won my bracelet in 125,000. So hopefully I had some good things to say about, dealing with an upswing at that time. When we discussed it in 2024, I was actually dealing with a downswing. But yeah, those like though that would be a good combination to go back and listen to both of those episodes back to back to see how our advice might have changed over those 3 years. Yeah, so that's a really good recommendation. How to deal with upswings. Oh, here's one of your favorites. Andrew discusses using modern poker theory in soft games, episode 195.
Yeah, wrote a whole book about that.
Yep. Ooh.
197, Andrew and Carlos discuss implied odds. This, I believe, launched the meme of Andrew hates the term implied odds.
Yes, I do remember that. That's another era in poker, or at least Thinking Poker Daily lore that seems to have passed. You probably just reignited it. But there was this time where you were really like adamant that the phrase implied odds shouldn't be used. And it was kind of like, yeah, a meme. Whenever someone would write hands, that they would refer to the fact that they can't use the words implied odds. So they would try to describe implied odds without using those words, and that was so fun. This one caught my eye. Episode 210. Andrew and Carlos discuss a new tag team tournament idea. Oh, okay, this is not what I thought it was going to be. I was thinking maybe tag team tournaments had just come out at that time and we kind of talked about it. But this was someone proposing a new version of a tag team tournament that I'm sure never took off. And in fact, I would say tag team tournaments didn't seem to take off like we thought they would. They were so fun in the beginning, but I don't hear as much hoopla about them as I did at the time. It seems like you hear that about mystery bounties these days, but tag team tournaments seem to have fallen to the wayside a bit.
Yeah, that is a shame because I do think it was kind of the most fun. I mean, the WSOP still has it, but I don't know that too many other venues have a tag team event. But I just coached this year. I coached a father and son team. The son had just turned 21, and the two of them played that event as a team. Yeah, just there's, I mean, there's no other poker event that enables you to like share it with a special person in your life in the same way.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. What that reminds me of is we recently interviewed Tom McAvoy, who won the main event in 1983. And when he was heads up in the main event, his wife was sitting at the table with him. And I think his opponent's wife or girlfriend was sitting at the table with him. So that's a thing that just is never going to happen again. But the idea that you could be heads up in the main event with your significant other, not on the rail, but literally sitting at the table with you. That's like, maybe that should be a format. It's like, significant other event. Where it's like what would it have to be? Maybe six-handed so you can make room. Maybe four-handed and just make room. That would be kind of fun.
Yeah, they don't play. They're just there for moral encouragement.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or to like give you a side eye when you make a mistake. What else we got
We
here?
have the Bonomo special and invite the whole polycule.
They would have to have a rail for them. They could not be at the table. So now we get to episode 241 through 244. Seems like one's missing. So 242 must have been a hand history discussion. But basically, those four episodes, 241 through 244, feature there were Andrew featuring Tommy Angelo, and they discussed a variety of different things. I mean, none of the topics seem to jump out that much to me, other than like they talked about flip and go events, which is another thing that I don't think really took off, thank God. But if you're a Tommy Angelo fan, and why wouldn't you be if you're a fan of anything that we do, highly recommend going back and check out those episodes.
I'll say this about those Tommy Angelo episodes. My first thought was, oh, I'll look through the submitted questions and I'll try to find ones that feel very Tommy Angelo-y, ones that are about like meditating or mental game sort of stuff. And I ran that past Tommy and he was like, no, I want to talk like poker strategy. So there's not a lot of places that you're going to find Tommy Angelo talking like hard poker strategy, talking about c-betting and three-bet pots. Like that's not in his books, it's not on his tapes. Like this is if you want to hear Tommy Angelo talking like at the table, how do you play specific poker hands in specific situations sort of strategy, this is one of the only places to get it.
Very, very, very good point. Now that I think about it, yeah, I've read several Tommy Angelo books. I've listened to several podcast appearances and conducted several podcast appearances with Tommy, and we rarely get into, hardcore poker strategy. So if that's something you're interested in, this is one of the few places you can find it.
I
That's
do
great.
remember that there's one preflop hand chart in Elements of Poker, and it has King Queen in one category and every other hand in another category.
But this does remind me that we should also recommend people check out Poker Simple, which was a YouTube project that Tommy Angelo and Thinking Poker Daily supporter Lee Jones did, where they did talk a lot of strategy. I really enjoyed those videos, and I'm sure those are still available on YouTube. So highly recommend Tommy Angelo and Lee Jones Poker Simple videos on YouTube. But other than that, other than Poker Simple, you're not going to get a lot of Tommy Angelo strategy. Mostly what you hear from him is mental game stuff. All right, let's go to the next section of episodes.
260 catches my eye. Andrew and Carlos discuss variance versus loose aggressive players. This is another one that I think just the whole idea of variance being a thing that you should be like thinking about and trying to control while you're playing a hand, I think is just a very misguided way of thinking. I think that the way you control variance is by with bankroll management and game selection. Once you're playing,
yes.
I mean, outside of a few specific tournament situations where like ICM is a bit, but like when you're playing cash, for instance, you really should not be thinking in terms of like, how do I limit my variance in this hand? And I think that's something a lot of people would benefit from hearing.
Yeah. Specifically, I would say bad loose aggressive players. Like, I mean, there's a lot of like, I would argue most of the best players are going to be loose aggressive, but specifically, I'm thinking of like bad loose aggressive players, overly aggressive players. Against that type, it really just boils down to bankroll management. Just have a good bank because you've already done the game selection if you're in a game that's full of these sort of players. So that part has already taken care of itself. And now all you have to do is just have a proper bankroll and don't click fold. Just click call, close your eyes, click call, and have a proper bankroll. That's how you deal with the variance because you're going to win so often. Like, I mean, honestly, what you're probably going to get a lot of times is positive variance against these player types. So
not if you try to run away from the negative variance, you aren't.
Yes. That's the worst thing you can do against these player types. Very good point. Wow. Andrew and Carlos discussed playing No Limit Hold'em and PLO at the same time. That was episode 268. Just looking at it now, my advice would be don't. But I can't imagine how difficult that would be. But I feel like you've done it a couple of times. Like, I do know you used to play like scoop, and maybe you're in like some scoop PLO event, and then you would play like a few games of like no limit cash on the side. I imagine that can be difficult.
Yeah, it's a lot more difficult if you're playing a different format entirely. Well, I guess maybe in some ways it's not, because at least you're going to notice it's a PLO table and not a no limit table because you have four cards. It's probably easier. Like, I think the big problem of playing MTTs and tournaments and cash at the same time is kind of needing to like switch back and forth between tournament brain and cash brain in terms of like how you're playing a specific hand. And I think just seeing that you have four cards is going to trigger PLO brain. But I do find it's like extra taxing to, you're like, I'm not going to play as many tables, for instance, if I'm trying to play multiple games, and mostly it's just not worth it to try to do that.
So do you think the four card nature of PLO makes it easier to separate those two things in your brain?
Yeah, I think you're not going to be as tempted. So like the platonic ideal of this problem would be if you're playing something like worse and you don't notice that the game, or you sort of forget that the game has switched from stud to raz or something, and you're sitting there like chasing your quads just, you know, and then all of a sudden you're playing raz, that's the danger. You're not going to mistake playing Omaha for playing stud, right? You know when you're playing Omaha versus when you're playing stud. And I think even if you don't literally realize you're playing the wrong game, I think if you haven't fully transitioned your brain away from thinking in terms of like, oh, PLO, I have to make the nuts versus no limit, like you're just trying to make a pair or whatever, you would probably end up playing too tight in no limit and or like overvaluing your big pairs in PLO.
That makes perfect sense. So there's another episode that I'm seeing on the screen now is episode 277. Andrew and Carlos discuss if targeting is an exploitative strategy. This one jumped out at me because in addition to doing this walk down memory lane of our favorite memorable theory episodes, we also wanted to give some of the main takeaways from the hand history episodes. And targeting is a topic that comes up very often in the hand history. So we're kind of getting like a two in one when we discuss this particular episode. And I really can't, you know, refer the listeners to like some of the great hand history discussions that we had on targeting, because it doesn't have the word targeting in the title like this one does. But just that idea of making sure that whenever you're value betting or bluffing, that you have the sort of hand that you're targeting in mind. Meaning, if you're value betting, you need to have in mind like what hand you're hoping to get called by. And if you're bluffing, you need to have in mind what sort of hand you're hoping to fold out. And that's going to do a better job of allowing you to pick the proper bet size, and also make sure that you even want to make this bet. Because maybe sometimes you think of a target and then you think, okay, that's not even in the range. Or you think, okay, I want to bluff this target, but they're never folding that. And then you just decide not to bet at all. So targeting is super important. That's something I harp on a lot with my students. And this particular episode was trying to discern if this is something we're doing exploitatively, or does the solver also think about targeting when it comes up with his strategies?
As it happens, I wrote an article for the GTA Wizard blog called "Do Solvers Have Targets?" And I don't think I'm spoiling too much to say that the answer is yes.
Nice, nice. So targeting isn't an exploitative strategy. And I hope
It is, but
that.
it doesn't have to be.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense to me. That makes sense. I highly recommend the episode. This is something that, like I was telling Andrew before we started recording today, I would guess probably at least once every month we get a hand submitted to the show where someone failed to do the targeting that they should have. And so because this
More like once an
mistake
episode.
because this mistake comes up so often, I would say it would be pretty beneficial for anyone that's listening to this to go back to listen to episode 277 to hear us discuss targeting. Andrew and Carlos discuss big three bet shoves versus late position opens, episode 292. This was from January 2022, and I don't know if I started using GTO Wizard or things like GTO Wizard by that point, but I do know I was probably doing a lot of big shoves back then, big three bet shoves. And I was just doing it because it was easy. And it may not be the most plus EV thing to do, but if it was profitable at all, that was good enough for me. And since that time, I've gotten access to GTO Wizard where I can see the EV differences between a lot of these plays. And I can tell you, I still do a decent amount of it to this day, but now I've gotten better at leaning towards doing it with the hands that the solver prefers to do it with, and occasionally doing it with hands that might be a small EV loss, but it kind of locks in. Like when I say EV loss, like the shove might be profitable for, I don't know, 0.75 EV. And calling or three betting to a smaller size might be good for 0.78. So it's a 0.03 difference. And that difference is small enough for me that I'd rather just take the easy money and jam pre if I think I'm going to make mistakes if I three bet smaller or call. But back at the time of this episode, I was probably taking some jams and spots where the EV difference is more like, 0.20, which is just too much to overcome. Like I should, if the difference is that big, I should just do like the higher EV play. And so if you sound anything like me, that's probably a good episode to go back and listen to. And hopefully we find, I don't know if we've talked about this in the past year or so, but hopefully we did an additional episode where I was like a little bit better informed about EV differences when it comes to the topic of big three bet shoves. But it is one of my favorite things to do.
Yeah, and this question of smaller raises versus shoves is a great example of range splitting, to come back to an earlier topic
Ah,
that we discussed.
yes, very good point. Oh my God. Bomb pot theory, skip.
Yeah, so this probably launched the Carlos is intimidated by non-standard games meme.
I remember it was Brendan. Oh God, I see it right now. Episode 329. Andrew and Carlos discussed double board PLO bomb pots, which just combines so many things that I dislike, which is double boards, PLO bomb pots, and also live poker. So Brendan had a little phase there where he was submitting those hands like, once a week or so, and I was just like, giving him the eye roll pretty much every time because I'm like, man, I don't know. I don't know. But
It
yeah, that was a
started to
fun
feel
era.
targeted.
It felt kind of malicious. But yeah, the 2022, man, time flies. I do remember the era like it was yesterday. And we're only up to episode 329, and we're going through to 1,000. So it shows you how meaningful this show is to us, where that feels like it was just yesterday. When I look at the date, it was like, almost 2.5 years ago. Let's see what else in here looks good. Yeah, there was a whole little phrase, whole little section in there. Somebody else wanted to discuss run it twice tournaments. Like, I'm glad that didn't take off, whatever that is.
I see episode 374, facing a big stack on the bubble. This is literally the topic that I've been writing about for the GTA Wizard blog in the last couple of weeks. With the advent of post-flop ICM, we're able to look at this concept in amazing new depth.
Yeah, and I can tell you back in 2022, I was a terror on the bubble when I had a big stack. And it was because people were not aware of the adjustments they needed to make to their pre-flop play. And I was just taking advantage of people left and right. So I'm pretty sure that episode, we talked a lot about that. And because we talked a lot about it, and because now that there's access to it, learning about it through the new post-flop ICM solver, through GTO Wizard, I don't get to be as much of a maniac as I was 2 years ago on the bubble. So that's probably why I went on that downswing in 2024. People, caught up to, they can't just, they got to respect my authority on the bubble. Like, you can't be erasing 50% of hands from the button. So yeah, I definitely had some nice any two card jam spots on certain players back then. Which is kind of the opposite of episode 372, which is Andrew and Carlos discuss overestimating opponents. I was underestimating opponents in that case, because I think some people started to adjust their pre-flop opening ranges. And you kind of warned me of this at the time. It's like, I would take advantage of people who were opening too wide. And I can remember your voice telling me, well, that should be baked into their pre-flop opening ranges, the fact that they're going to face a lot of pressure from you. And at the time, I was thinking, like, yeah, it should be, but it isn't. And I kind of overestimated or underestimated their ability to adjust to that. And they may have proved me wrong in 2022 and 2023, 2023 and 2024, when I kind of went on that downswing. But yeah, so that was the opposite of this episode. Overestimating opponents sounds like another thing I do, where whenever I'm playing against some well-known player. In fact, recently, I went deep in something on WSOP.com, them 215 tournament with Tony Dunst and Alex Foxen at my table. And then another Nick Papuya, I don't know how to say his last name, but I was like, there's no way all three of these people should be at my table in a 215 tournament. And so I tend to like overestimate those players like that, and sometimes play worse against them because of it. And I imagine that's what we talked about in that episode. I like this combination. Episode 398, Andrew and Carlos discuss adjustments to make when you're the table bully. And then episode 399, Andrew and Carlos discuss adjustments to make when you're the table nit. That sounds fun. Yeah, I was trying to think, okay, what did we talk about in the episode? But the title's pretty self-explanatory there. And I don't want to give those adjustments away. You can go listen to the episode to see what we recommended there.
Or 12, betting into dry side pots. That's actually not one that we can, because it's a multi-way situation. It's still not a case where we can use a solver to really get a sense of how to play those spots. I think it's something that's pretty poorly understood by the poker population in general. I think I have some good theoretical insights into how to handle dry side pots, but I am curious about like exactly how far to take those insights, and I'm looking forward to one day being able to ask a computer.
Right. And this guy specifically wanted to know about betting to a dry side pot for protection. So generally, we say that you don't want to bet too thinly into a dry side pot because you have to beat the guy who's all in anyway. But what if you feel like you'd like to get some protection from your hand? That's what we discussed there. And just off the top of my head, I don't remember what we said, but it's a pretty interesting question.
It depends, is probably what we said.
Right. So yeah, that's another one that I agree with you, Andrew. That's something that a lot of people still need to do some work on. So that's a good topic to go back and listen to. Another one on range splitting, episode 419. Ooh. Episode 427, Andrew and Carlos discuss dealing with being card dead. That's one that I think a lot of people would enjoy and learn something from.
Yeah. 436 late regging tournaments and satellites. I know that's something that my opinion has changed a lot on in the last couple of years. I think that episode probably postdates my conversion to late regging enthusiast, but I imagine a lot of people are still lagging on that. I think that would be of interest to a lot of people.
Yeah, I agree with that. Late regging, and then also, this takes me back to what I was saying earlier about some of the major takeaways from the first 1,000 episodes. And we've gotten a decent number of satellite hand histories sent in. So we've done hand episodes on satellites. We've also done a number of theory episodes on satellites, including this one. And the major takeaway from those, I would just summarize this and what I've learned from Dara, which is the most important equity is fold equity. So if I can summarize that, even well, not summarize it, just to expand upon that summary, I would say if you're thinking about a calling decision and it's close, you should probably fold. And if you're thinking about a jamming decision and it's closed, you should probably jam. If you keep those two ideas in your mind and satellites, up until the point you have enough chips to fold in, and then you should just definitely fold everything. But up until the point where while you're still trying to accumulate, you would rather be accumulating by jamming and taking the pots down pre than by calling and having to win at showdown when it's close. And sometimes it's closer than you would think in a lot of spots. So I'm pretty sure we'll kind of throw out a couple of some more episode numbers on satellite strategy, but I do like the combination of this episode between satellite discussion and also late regging in satellites as well as tournaments. Andrew and Carlos discuss soft playing, episode 422. That's another one that can just be
442.
summarized. 442. That's another one that can just be summarized to don't. let's see. Mystery bounty. So we get some mystery bounties. Mystery bounties was okay. It's been 2 years, huh? August of 2022, we had a mystery bounty episode.
I got a mystery bounty day two to play on Monday.
Nice. Maybe you should go back. Well, you've already made day two. This was day
Yeah.
one strategy. So
Nailed
hopefully you've
it.
yeah, hopefully you took those lessons from the episode into account.
A 462 raising a draw with no fold equity. Playing draws and playing big draws. That's a concept that's come up many times on the show. And of course, there is no easy answer to it, which is why we've had to discuss it so many times. But I think there's some of the more complicated situations in poker because they're such flexible hands. There's not as clear of a, like you can kind of answer a question of like, how should I play my strong hands? I mean, it always depends, but like there's a little bit more of a clear answer to stuff like that. When it comes to draws, they're so flexible and there's so many different things you could be trying to accomplish with them, which are sometimes in tension with one another, that I think, you know, all the episodes we've done on playing big draws are going to be particularly valuable episodes.
Yes. Probably our all-time favorite episode, episode 489. Andrew and Carlos discussed the meaning of poker life.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, that was a great one. Just talking about like how to live a good poker life, and not just at the table, but away from the table. And I have very fond memories of the episode, and I highly, highly, highly recommend everyone go back and listen to episode 489. It's amazing that that one was so close to episode 500. We probably should have done something like this for episode 500, but we were that with that one kind of like went past us without. So in fact, we should give a shout out to Danny Sprung, who recommended we do something special for episode 1000. And this is kind of what we came up with. So we hope you guys are enjoying it. I'm sure everybody's happy with this episode, except Nate Mavis, who is probably cringing at the fact that we've completely blown through the Mavis threshold of 10 minutes per episode. This is like one that's basically can double and may actually double as a regular Thinking Poker podcast episode, but it's a fun occasion. Now I'm feeling kind of festive going through this walk down what's it called?
Mary Lane.
Memory lane. I don't know. My mind was thinking mystery lane. I was like, no, that's not it. Yeah, more satellite strategy, more late Reggie.
And implicit collusion, that's a little like soft play.
Yep. Implicit collusion. That was episode 526. This one though is like not, you can't simplify this one to don't, because implicit is different from explicit. And like there's just parts of the game where just like some where both players are correctly following their incentives, and it just kind of works in a way where they're sort of like implicitly colluding. So like for example, you're on the bubble of a satellite, somebody's all in for less than a big blind and a big blind, and then everybody limps with one big regardless of the hand. Like that's kind of like collusion, but it's like a loud collusion. That's different from soft playing. And I would say that one can be simplified to do. So it's kind of cool to have those two episodes in close proximity to each other. Oof. Episode 527, Andrew and Carlos discuss why decent players struggle in soft games. I need to go back and listen to that one because I have no idea what we said. But that seems like a very powerful episode for a lot of players. December of 2022. Can't imagine what I said about that idea back then. All right, so we're up to episode 527 now. And okay, my page doesn't want to refresh. And I lost my filter. All right, just a second here. Yeah, the beauty of doing this is you can see how we've talked about similar topics multiple times over the years, and you can see how our advice has changed, and then also how, some things never change. And the things that haven't changed over the course of 5 years, 4 years, those are definitely things that you want to keep in mind when you're planning.
Yeah.
Oh, but yeah, this is similar. Episode, this used to be my big thing. Episode 533, Andrew and Carlos discuss studying GTO ranges, but playing in non-GTO environments. Actually, that's not what I thought it was going to be. Studying in the ranges is one thing. That's not necessarily the same thing as applying GTO, particularly like post-flop play in non-GTO environment, basically like not exploiting players who are ripe for exploiting. That's where I thought this was going to go, but this just sounds like, studying the ranges. But like most things in GTO, I would say if you're playing in non-GTO environments, the purpose of studying the rules is to learn how to better break the rules, not to play the way the solver plays. And that same thing applies to GTO ranges. So like I can tell you, for example, if you're on the button and the GTO opening range generally tends to be roughly 50% of hands in a lot of situations, if your opponents are nits and they're not properly defending, you can open way looser than that. And so but you study the ranges to see why you can open way looser and how you can open way looser, like which hands to add. But just because these people aren't playing GTO doesn't mean, I mean, you should, just because you're studying GTO and playing these sort of games, it doesn't mean you should be playing GTO in these sort of games. Yeah, so many of these we've hit on. Oh, here's a good one. Episode 556, Andrew and Carlos discuss risk versus reward in tournaments. That's a phrase that I think about a lot when I'm coaching and also when I'm playing. That was in January of 2023. Not exactly sure what I said in that episode, but just that phrase, risk versus reward. I find myself using that a lot these days.
Me too.
Okay, here's a good one. 577. Andrew and Carlos discuss cash game table selection. When you in your times playing live cash, were you pretty aggressive about table selection?
In bigger games, you don't often have a lot of choice, but I will say that I think I was a lot better than the average. So like at National Harbor, this would come up sometimes where the 10-25 game would not be very good and all the waiting lists would be long. So I would get on the list for everything from like 2-5 all the way up through, I don't know, 25-50 or something. And I mean the 25-50 game often wouldn't even go. But the I'd get a seat in the 10-25 first and I would play it, but like if they called my name for the 2-5, there's a fair chance I'm going to leave the 10-25 and go play 2-5. And that's not something you'll see very many other 10-25 players doing. There could be non-ego reasons for this. I don't mean to imply that like, everyone else is all like invested in a pissing contest, but like I was leaving because I thought my EV was going to be higher sitting in a 2-5 game. And I think a lot of people are reluctant to do that walk of shame. So there is, I mean, the table selection is a big deal if you're playing something like 1-2 or maybe 2-5, depending on the room where there are a lot of tables. You really should never be sitting in a bad 1-2 game. Like there's it's not hard to find a good 1-2 game. But I think what might be an under-discussed concept and may have come up in that episode is also just like being, and this is a very Nate Mavis concept, being willing to play a smaller game if it's a better game.
Yeah, I do have you like when I think about the idea of like, not participating in the pissing contest and just like coming in with the goal of like leaving with the most money. That is the idea that I associate with you, is like that willingness to play poker for money. It's kind of like a basic concept, but a lot of people forget that sometimes.
Yeah.
So that's great.
On a similar topic, episode 630, playing the main event. A lot of people, and I think it kind of makes sense in the main event that maybe you're not only playing for money, but I think for people who do at some point want to play the main event or are planning on playing the main event, I think a decent amount of that episode is actually about how to think about what your goals are going to be, more so than like, I don't know how much we were talking about like check raising turns. I think it was a lot of just like, how should you approach playing the main event depending on what your goals are.
That's a really good one that I think, pretty much every year you have people either playing the main event for the first time or playing it again and trying to like bone up on their skills before they play. And so that's always a good episode that's gonna people can come back to year after year. Episode 630 on playing the main event. I don't know what this is. 631, discuss game design.
Yeah, I was thinking that too. I don't remember doing that.
Yeah, it's probably something to do with structuring games in a way where they survive. Okay, yeah, this is, I don't know what this is. Oh, this guy was talking about getting rid of late regging, because it's bad for the game. It's like, so the fact that late regging is allowed in poker is bad game design, because it's bad for the game.
Yeah, I think a lot of this is people not appreciating what tournaments are designed for and why tournaments exist in the first place.
See, when you said that, I remember you saying something very similar to that in the episode. This question was from Tom, and he basically said, I understand the casinos are running the tournaments to make money, so they'll do what's most profitable. But as a matter of competition, do you think allowing late registering hurts? Well, it doesn't hurt them making money, so that's why they do it. But it probably does hurt, the game in terms of its design on a purely competition basis. But they don't care. And yeah, that was basically the takeaway that, like, basically his question answered itself. Like, they're doing this to make money, and they don't really care about the game design. Yeah, I vaguely remember that episode as a fun one now. Another one, 647 on WSOP prep, which may not be main event specific. That may be just be maybe for the summer as a whole, but you got like 9 months if you want to bone up all your you want to get ready for summer 2025. You can start, checking those episodes out and getting ready, because you should always be getting ready for the summer. But a lot of people wait until May to start doing their WSOP prep. Along those same lines, 670 is on preparing for a live tournament, not main event specific, but a lot of people listening to us don't get to play a lot of live poker. So pretty much anytime they can get to the casino and play a live tournament, it's the main event for them. So it's probably going to be some similar ideas in all three of those episodes.
672 minimum VPIP games. I think that's probably like, I'm not aware of that strategy discussion existing anywhere else. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked to learn. It's not like I've listened to every poker podcast there is, but I think this is an under-discussed concept in poker. I think a fair number of people, if you're playing on something like Poker Bros or certain home games, there's games where you're required to maintain a certain amount of VPIP or you're considered a nit and kicked out of the game. And I don't think strategy for like kind of like how do you hit those minimums without spewing money? How do you give the illusion of being a gambler without actually, you know, making massive negative EV gambles? That's probably a pretty unique conversation there.
Yeah, you jogged my memory on it, because when I first saw the title of it, I didn't know what that meant. But you're right.
See, Carlos doesn't even get invited to these games.
Yeah, they know. They've listened to the podcast enough to not even invite me to a minimum BPIP game. But yeah, I listen to enough. I consume enough poker strategy content out there that I would think I would have come across something like this before if it's out there, and I haven't. So at the very least, we can say if this is something you're interested in, this is one of the few places where you can hear some discussion on minimum VPIP games, which was episode 672 of Thinking Poker Daily. 680, Andrew and Carlos discuss facing the Saddy Daddy. Which was a nickname that I gave to myself. Yeah, that's probably not the sort of nickname you should be giving to yourself. Although I don't think I would want anybody else to give that to me. So I'm the type of person that have no problem that has no problem with giving a nickname like that to myself. Just my focus on satellite strategy. And this was a hand that somebody submitted. Basically asking what should they do if they ever found themselves in a satellite against me. I think that was the case. So this could have been somebody who actually played a satellite against me, but I think it was more of a hypothetical. And that was a fun, adjustment. So this question is, you're in a satellite. There's a satellite for one seat and you're heads up against me. And then the second question is, there's a satellite for four seats. There are five players left and one of the five players is me. And how would your strategy change in those two scenarios? That was a fun episode. I can't imagine what the answers we gave in that one were, but I don't remember them. But if you're interested in satellites, that's got to be a fun one to go back and listen to. Episode 679 on discussing deal making. That's something that comes up a lot if you play like smaller stakes live tournaments and occasionally even some of the bigger stuff. But it's amazing how much more often you see deals in like dailies, as opposed to tournaments that have like, you know, six-figure pay jumps. And or maybe there's just deals happening in those and I just haven't been a party to those deals. Or maybe those deals are like done behind the scenes by the, you know, amongst the backers. Like the players might not even be involved in those discussions. But for whatever reason, I feel like, you know, any, you know, 30-player feel daily, there's always a deal at the end of those. Let's see. So we're up to about episode 700 now, which takes us to about 2 years ago. And I'm sorry, about a year ago, August of 2023. This is something we hit on earlier, episode 698. How rake influences cash game strategy. That was a big one for me because I did not appreciate how much tighter you have to be in cash games versus tournaments, and also how much more you should be three betting in cash games as opposed to tournaments. And I think that's generally a function of both the rake and the lack of antes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I didn't really appreciate that either until I started looking at sims.
Episode 712, Andrew and Carlos discussed the objective of tournaments. I'm not sure what we said in that one, but that feels like one I'd like to go back and listen to as well. It was a cash game one. Episode 742, Andrew and Carlos discuss blind chopping etiquette. Feels like one that, you know, Nate would have had a lot to say about.
Yeah.
Oh, this is funny. episode 747 on massively multi-way button squeezing ranges. We just talked about this in the Think It Poker Daily $50 supporter meeting last night. So that question was presented by Mark. So Mark, if you're listening, I would say you should go back and check out episode 747 from October of 2023 to get more on what we discussed last night. Yeah, that's great. This is something that I also associate with you. Episode 750 and 752 on short stack limping and also early position limping. Like you seem to be, at least at one point, I don't know if this is still the case, more open to open limping in spots where other people would just never do it. You seem to be a lot more flexible on that in certain games where the conditions allow for it.
I wrote
Is
something
that still the case?
for the 2+2 magazine a long time ago called "Open-Minded About Open Limping," but yes, that is still the case. I think it is worth considering in a lot of live cash environments, in particular.
Yeah, so this is going to be another topic that you're not going to hear most people discuss. Like most people are just going to be dismissive of it, and just because people who do it, people who open limp tend to do it for the wrong reasons. You have a lot of people that just completely dismiss it and just refuse to think about it or talk about it intelligently. And so this is one of the few places where you're going to hear a discussion of, the merits of open limping from Andrew. And that's going to be episode 752. So if that's something you're interested in, go back and check that one out. Yeah, at this point, we're seeing a lot of these that are repetitive, but that's just a sign that this is something that, people need a lot of work on because we get these same questions over and over in different forms. So I'm just like quickly skim through these last ones to find something, the things that are unique that I can point the listener to, but yeah, I can see. I mean, after 1,000 episodes, there's going to be some repetition in there, especially in a game as difficult to master as poker. This was interesting. Episode 793, where we discuss the compare EV display in GTO Wizard. That's one that's been a game changer for me. In fact, that's one of the things I used when I started to get more nuanced about which hands I would make big three bet jams with. That tool was very helpful.
Yeah, I bet a lot of people don't even know it's there.
Yeah. Basically, it just allows you to compare the EV of two different choices, and just like it basically does subtraction for you. Yeah, you could just like, click on a combo and just look at the EV of like all the different things you can do. And what most people do is they'll look at that and they'll just pick the highest one and go from there. But they don't, take into account that although one is the highest, it may not be that much better than another one. And you really see this in spots where because one of them is higher at all, the color of the box is going to be like solid. And you're not going to think of like, okay, this is a potential spot for a mixed strategy because you tend to only think of that when the box isn't, solidly one color. Like maybe it's like, you call with this hand 50% of the time and raise with it 50% of the time. So the box is like half and half green and red or whatever color you use. But then there's times where the box is solidly green and it's a pure call. But that could be because the EV of calling is like, one notch better than the EV of raising. And when you use the compare EV tool and it'll show you that that's not that much different, then this is also a spot where you can mix if you are willing to sacrifice that, small amount of EV. So that's been a useful tool for me. 813, Andrew and Carlos discuss non-straddling regulars. That's another one that sounds personal. Because I tend to be that sort of player who just does not like straddling, which is why I don't play much live poker. Here's a good one. Episode 814, Andrew and Carlos discuss questions to ask yourself before acting. That's one that seems like it's worthy to go back to several times just to keep those questions fresh in your mind. I remember episode 830. Andrew and Carlos discuss how to prove you're a winning player. This one was from a guy who wanted his wife to let him play more poker or something,
Oh,
and
yeah.
he wanted us to help him prove to his wife that he was a winning player. And I think he got the exact opposite of what he was looking for. And the funny thing about that is I feel like he was going to, have us convince his wife that he's a winning player, and then he was going to play the episode for her. But because we kind of like pointed him in the direction of maybe this evidence that you're using to show you're a winning player is kind of shaky. Not that you're not a winning player, it's just mostly that you don't have enough of a sample size to prove that. And once we told him that, I guarantee you he never let his wife hear the episode. But that was a fun episode. That it was a little bit difficult of an episode because we had to give some hard truths to someone who we don't know personally, but he did ask, and we wanted to be honest. But it was a memorable one for me.
I mean, not this exact topic, but just in general, the kind of negotiation with a spouse of a number of things around poker, time spent on poker, money spent on poker. A non-trivial amount of the coaching that I do is, I mean, it's not certainly the majority, but some amount of the coaching that I do, like, I often have discussions about this with my students. I think this is a real thing that's on a lot of people's minds.
Yes. I've heard you say a couple of times that, a good percentage of your coaching is just marriage counseling in disguise.
Yeah, I make up numbers depending on how bombastic I'm trying to be, but it's probably actually like 1%, but
Episode 832, where we discuss symmetric versus asymmetric stack sizes. That one was a recent one from February of 2024. And I know it's recent because I did not give much thought to that whole idea until recently. And that's generally how your ranges change depending on not just your stack, but the stacks around you. So, for example, if everybody has 30 big blinds, you're gonna play a different range than if you're the effective stack with 30 big blinds and you have like some shorter stacks behind you and some bigger stacks behind you. Like where those stacks are and just how much bigger and how much smaller has a pretty big impact on what you can do with your 30 bigs effective stack. And that's not something I took into account up until this year. Before this year, I was just like, play the effective stack. That's all I knew how to do. But thanks to GTO Wizard, we can see how those ranges tend to change. So that was a fun one to discuss. One of my least favorite topics, episode 839, Andrew and Carlos discussed cheating in online poker. But sadly, we had pretty good calls to this to discuss this sort of thing earlier this year, as we always will. That's something that you can go back and listen to the episode if you're concerned about that. And what I would say also is that one that topic is probably going to come up multiple times, and probably every time it comes up, it's going to become more and more concerning. And I can tell you at the time of that particular episode, because I kind of still feel the same way now, I'm not that worried about it. Maybe check with me in 2 years and I'll have a different, I'll be singing a different tune. All right. And now we are on the last page up to episode 853, which is on seat selection. Oh, you know what? This is probably the one about GG Poker, which has this feature that when you make the final table in a tournament, you get to choose which seat you want at the final table. That I don't think happens anywhere else. So that one's probably not going to be that useful for people. But because it's so rare, it's probably something that there's not a lot of discussion about. So if you do play on GG and you want to hear some people who have no experience in that sort of game trying to figure it out, that's the episode for you. But for most people, that one's not going to be that useful. Another range splitting one, episode 858. Oh, this was a fun one. Episode 882, Andrew and Carlos discussed tournament ROI. That actually might not be what I'm thinking of. Let me just click on the description really quick. Okay, so this question was about why do smart people play tournaments? Because the ROI and the higher fields are so small that are they even worth it for the amount of variance? I think that was generally the idea of this question, because this question came up after our discussion on the regular podcast with Ike Haxton, where we talked about, you know, how small the ROIs are in the average high roller tournament. And I think somebody heard that and they wanted to follow up with, well, if the ROIs are so high, why even bother
So low.
dealing with it? It's so low. Yeah. Why even bother with dealing with that variance? And yeah, so that's what that discussion was about. Another one that's probably not going to be super relevant to most people listening is like the logistics and finances behind, you know, 25Ks plus. Not something that I'm super that's super relevant to me in my life at this point.
Not
Maybe
relevant, but
one day.
interesting, maybe.
Yes, definitely interesting. 883 on how to use GTO Wizard. I feel like we did a lot of episodes talking about that in various forms. That one is going to be very useful.
895 discussed buying the showdown. That one very explicitly prompted me to do some more research and write a GTO Wizard article.
Yes, I agree with that. And that's one where we gave a shout out to Alex Fitzgerald, who was the first person to teach me that idea, which is essentially not polarizing on the turn. Generally, on the turn, you want to polarize by choosing a bigger size and just betting your best hand with some weaker bluffs to balance. And then a lot of the stuff in the middle, you just check. But instead, what Alex likes to do against opponents who are not going to punish him for it is to bet the turn for a smaller size with some of those middle strength hands, so that the person will either fold or call and then check to them on the river so they can check back for free. So he refers to that as buying the showdown. So we did some discussion of when to do that, when not to do it. So that's one I would highly recommend to people who are playing in more passive games. That's a pretty powerful tool in those games. Let's see. Episode 922, Andrew and Carlos discuss how to bring money on a poker trip. That's another one that you're not going to hear discussed in a lot of places. Speaking of logistics, yeah, you definitely have to be aware of if you're playing, especially something like the main event. You really don't want to be carrying like 10K on you too often. So we talked about some ways around that. So I can see that being useful to a lot of people. One of my favorite topics, episode 930, is discussing taking notes on players. When you're playing in soft games where people are making a lot of mistakes, that's not doing a lot for you unless you're making yourself aware of the mistakes they're making and, as much detail as possible, because that is what's going to allow you to effectively exploit these players and outdo a GTO solution. So a lot of people don't like GTO. And they say, oh, I'm just going to exploit, but then they don't pay enough attention to know what to exploit. So, getting those reads is step one if you're playing in soft games and you want to try to exploit those. Episode 932 is probably my second favorite episode of all time. Actually, this might be a tie for first. The first one was on about a meaningful poker life, and this one was about the making of Thinking Poker Daily, which is kind of similar to this episode you're listening to, is and that episode we did a little bit of a walk down memory lane on some of our favorite Thinking Poker Daily episodes. We even talked about, some of the work that Nate did in the beginning to create Thinking Poker Daily, and then he handed the reins over to me, and some of the behind the scenes stuff I do as well. And just, the fun that we have in making this show. So that's, for sure in my top two favorite episodes of all time. And we're now approaching the end of this list as we get closer and closer to episode 1000. And just glancing through this one, episode 962 is kind of similar. Discussing using GTO in real life and thinking about GTO in real life. I like those sort of like meta strategy episodes. And it just shows how, this is a game, but it's something important that can be useful outside of the game. I love, those sort of conversations. And we tend to have a number of those in these first 1,000 episodes.
Yeah, I think I borrowed an anecdote from David Skransky for that episode.
Yep. And that is about it. So, as we're recording this, the last episode that we've published is episode 997. So of course you're listening to episode 1000, so it hasn't been published yet. But we just kind of wanted to have this walk down memory lane for those of you who have been with us from the beginning, to hopefully you enjoy this walk down memory lane as well. And for those of you who are signing up more recently, to kind of guide you to some of the stuff that you can kind of go back through the catalog and listen to. Also, this is probably a pretty good time to give some shout outs to our top $50 supporters who made this show possible in the beginning. We could not have done it without some of these guys. So I want to say probably one of our first subscribers, Chris Hayward. Chris Hayward and also Andrew Sidrain, who were, some of our earlier $50 subscribers. Like, going back to Chris might have been our very first subscriber. He was definitely one of the first ones from November 27th of 2020. Also, like Dan Singer was another one who was there with us in the beginning, who's a good friend. But the guys who really just had that faith in us to support the show at the highest level from the very beginning, like we definitely could not have done this show without them. So want to give those guys a shout out. In fact, Greg Thomas is another one who was a student of mine who came to Thinking Poker Daily after having been a student. I think he came through me to me through Alex. So he was a big supporter of the show. Joe Koulis, who was also there in the beginning in December of 2020, who's still to this day showing up to all the meetings, giving great comments and questions in the meetings, and just being a big supporter of the show. Lee Jones, who comments on every single episode, and always has like great comments, and he's real big on like taking some of these pithy little statements we make and saying that should be on a t-shirt. So love the support from Lee Jones,
I mean, obviously, I'm impressed by all those people, but I mean, can you imagine going back to like 2006 when you're playing on PokerStars and telling yourself, like, oh, the manager of this poker room in 15 years, he's going to subscribe to a podcast that I make? Like, that's pretty wild.
It is wild. It is wild because, like, the first time I saw Lee Jones, it was on a TV screen. He was doing like PokerStars commercials, and to have this guy show up to the Thinking Poker Daily meetings once a month and just have conversations with us about this game that's been a lifelong love of his, and for us to just kind of like be a part of that with him is like it's so amazing to me. It's so amazing. So yeah, I guess that is about it. I want to make sure. I mean, whenever you're doing stuff like this, you always feel like you don't want to leave anybody out, but you kind of have to leave some people out because it's like a pretty big list. But I'm just thinking about from the beginning of the show and the biggest supporters. I think those guys definitely are members of that list. Also, Steve Saunders, who's been a $50 subscriber for a while. But yeah, those guys from 2020 when this show was just getting its legs, like once again, I just want to say we couldn't have done this without you guys. So, thank you. And hopefully, you and others have enjoyed the first 1,000 episodes. I know I have. Thank you, Andrew, for doing this with me. It's been amazing. It's definitely made my life so much better over the last 4 years.
I'm glad to hear that because I feel the same way. And yeah, I'll just give in addition to seconding all the specific thanks that you gave, just a general thank you to everyone who's supported the show at any tier. We've been very selective about what kinds of advertisement we do on the main show. There's no shortage of opportunities if we wanted to sell you mattresses or frozen strawberries or like there's even just like bullshit poker stuff. Like I'm sure we could be selling you like some branded sunglasses or something. And we're really trying not to put that kind of stuff in the main show. It's just really not consistent with what we want that show to be. So I mean GTO Wizard an exception because I think that's like a tool that I mean that we use all the time and that we're legitimately happy to promote and we do think will bring value to the people who listen to the show. And the same thing with Tournament Poker Edge back when they were sponsors. But even that, I mean that's not bringing in it's not like paying our hourly rate to make the show. And the show is certainly in many ways a labor of love and we have done it at times when it was not monetized. But essentially where I'm going with this is that like your support on Patreon is the main thing that enables us to do the show without either coming out of pocket to do it now that we're paying an editor or putting a bunch of obnoxious ads on the show, which I don't think anybody wants. So, we're obviously very grateful that people consider us worth supporting, and we do thank you for that support and just for listening in general. I mean, I was talking before, but it's mind-blowing that like Lee Jones specifically is listening to this. But just the idea that that there are thousands of people who want to listen to us make this show on a regular basis is deeply flattering, and it means a lot to us.
Agreed. So for the first 1,000 episodes of Thinking Poker Daily and fastly approaching the 500th episode of the regular Thinking Poker podcast, we definitely like to thank you all for all of your support. Well, normally we sign off Thinking Poker Day. I sign off Thinking Poker Daily with, tune in next time. But because we started this like the regular Thinking Poker podcast show, I guess we should sign it off that way as well. But I don't remember how we signed that one off.
We don't usually. We just jump straight to an interview,
That
or we
is true.
just go out to music or something.
Right. That is true. So, although we started with an alternative open, I will end this one with a traditional ending of thank you for listening and tune in next time.